Hey, welcome back. It's time for another OC Spotlight. The one show, maybe the only show that shows you the most incredible people doing the most amazing things right here in our own backyard. And today, have we got a hot topic to talk about. Here we are starting 2024. What better topic than to talk about post-holiday, all the stuff that comes with the, we're burned out, we're fried out, we're tired, we're trying to make New Year's resolutions. We've got a real psychotherapist with us here today to try and make sense of all this. Welcome, if you will, Rachel Daly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here.
You have got a lot of work this time of year, I would think.
There is either this preload of my family's coming to town, I need sessions, and then there's like this 2 week in between where people go silent and then they start to load up. I think I had 2 emergency sessions today, as a matter of fact.
Goodness. Yeah. Well, I am the old grump in the room here. I'm Scrooge. I don't hate the holiday. Let's get this straight. I hate everything else around the holidays. The pressure, the commercialism, the fights that we're going to eat at your house and we're going to do this, but we forgot this and we can't have Uncle Joe here. And we got, oh my God. And then we go through all this exhaustion. And what do? We want to make New Year's resolutions after we're all burned out and fried out everything here. So let's separate that a little bit. That's why we brought you in here today. You have a first, let's clarify.
Yes.
What's the difference between a therapist, a psychologist, a psychotherapist? You all have these distinct terms, and I can't really say I know what the difference is between all those.
It's nuanced. A psychotherapist is, you know, kind of another term for therapist, but mostly if you're approaching it from maybe a psychoanalytic or a psychodynamic perspective.
Okay.
Not necessarily only or exclusive to those modalities.
Say that one again. So if you're, is this like Freudian or something? What little I know about any of the Jung or all this stuff here, is this the unconscious and all these things here?
A little bit of that, yeah. And a little bit of, there's psychodynamic and there's psychoanalytic, all kind of born out of the Freud ideology and birthplace, but with their own kind of variants. But mostly it's just a more specific term for therapist in that, or counselor in that, or psycho-counselor. Because oftentimes I find if you just say, I'm a therapist or I'm a counselor, they either think I'm a physical therapist.
Right.
And they
I need one of those, too.
Right? And then I'm like, no. Or they think maybe I'm a school counselor or a career counselor. So it really kind of hones it down and allows people to have a better idea. Now, a psychiatrist is a doctor, right? And they generally just prescribe medication and they work with a therapist or a psychotherapist.
So they've gone to med school, right?
Yes,
and they
preferably.
Can prescribe preferably. Yeah, preferably. All right, so it's all around, though, trying to unlock your brain. And we did a show just a while ago, as I knocked the microphone away. We did a show where we talked about mental health in workplaces, a whole other topic we could talk about someday. And this was an attorney who does a show with us here in Workplace Perspective. And she's saying, you know, today employees have... We've opened up the world. You can talk to employees about just about everything except mental health. If you admit, I'm having depression, I'm having mental health, I'm upset, I'm anxious, I'm worried, I'm depressed, we better get rid of Paul.
Right.
I don't know if I can handle that. I can handle that Paul's a drunk. I can handle that Paul's got...
He's cheating and stealing money off of the company.
That we can handle. Right. Paul, we'll send you some help. We'll do that. But he's depressed? Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so they're trying to get, again, it seems like the last barrier. Employers and employees don't really feel they can talk about mental health. I went through my issues years ago. I'm going to, we'll open the kimono here. I'll be vulnerable a bit. And I came from, I'm an Irish Catholic. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of drinkers in the family here. And I didn't have a drinking problem, but my mother had a depression problem, a lot of people in her family. And I went through a period where I just suddenly felt depressed. And I could not really talk to anybody about it. I went to a therapist eventually. That helped. And I did take some medication, like Paxil or something, to get you back up and going. And it was sort of like a proclivity. Your body's, I have to realize, I am sort of like an alcoholic. It always has a tendency. I can go there if I get too tired or too anxious or too overburdened or too loaded. Do we have these inherent tendencies within us? Do we have these inherited characteristics, or am I just imagining this because my mother had it here?
That's a loaded question. And that's, you just literally opened up nature versus nurture.
Yeah,
and I don't know that I'm the person to answer that. However, I would say that sometimes that impacts us. And if that's what's shown, it can be biological.
I certainly watched my mother do it, so I could have picked it up that way here.
Right? Yeah. Because it's always this, we do, parents don't realize that our kids are watching. And while we tell them to do something, and they'll do it short term, eventually at the end of the day, they'll model that. And what your mother modeled was alcohol as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Instead of teaching you emotional resiliency and how to get in touch with your own feelings and identify them, which, trust me, the world is not great at, then...
And I came from the Midwest. This is, you know, this is the, back in the, I was born in the 50s, so I'm dating myself here in the 60s. Real men like my dad, you didn't show emotion. You just tough it out. Just, you know. And so when I really had to go see a therapist and really was feeling, my dad was kind of ashamed. You know, oh my God, you know, you got to be tougher than this kid.
We white knuckle it. As a matter of fact, I actually just had a conversation with a client this morning who I see individually, but another person in my practice sees them as a couple. And then they just started the couple work and the his individual work. And I'm not going to give you guys names, obviously, so I'll protect it. However, we talked about suddenly he was loving therapy. And then suddenly there's a time issue around it. And he's not sure he can do it.
Right.
Because there's this resistance to be vulnerable. And there's a stigma. In particular, I don't want to genderfy it, but I think men are still buying into that social construct.
I think men have got to be tough. You got to gut it out. It's sports. You know, I'm wearing my Michigan hat. I'm a big U of M fan. I'm hoping for the national championship for this year. So, you know, and I watch these players and they get hurt. They just drag them off. Okay, my neck's broken. Who cares, coach? I'll go back in. Put me in.
Exactly. Man up.
Yeah, that's why I grew up in that world. So I think there is a certain stigma still about mental health and about seeking help. I'll tell you another group that we've had in here numerous, done lots of shows about veterans and the real tough guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was a bomber pilot, World War II. He kind of fit that description. And these are guys who are trained to think on their own, to adapt. Adapt or die, you know, and they can handle anything. All of a sudden, though, they can't handle this problem, and they're not trained to go to help. You're supposed to help yourself. I'm out in the field. Somebody's there to help me here. And so they say that veterans in particular have trouble seeking mental health.
That's kind of opened up a little bit in terms of, and I know we're getting off topic.
Yeah, right.
In terms of PTSD, once we kind of identified PTSD, there's still stigma around it for sure.
Right.
But we do a lot of work with a guy named Dr. Romig who works with vets. And in particular, he works with Navy SEALs.
Oh, the toughest of the tough.
And so the stigma's kind of resolving itself, but one of the first ways they get some relief from it is he's partnered with the government to help subsidize like ketamine treatments and stellate ganglia shots, which can be really impactful. And
don't
and
know anything about any of that. Well, yeah, right.
And that's another topic. We can talk about
all
that
right.
Later.
Well, yeah. So we're back to this beginning of the year. I give a real quick overview because I think mental health is the last taboo. It's the last topic we have trouble talking about. We can talk about all sorts of other crazy things and lifestyles and everything, but we can't really talk about. And when it comes to your own mental health, I found nobody really wants my friends. Like, hey, I don't know what to tell you. My family, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Everybody, the employers, oh, I don't want to hear about it. Everybody sort of pulls back. So maybe it's still I'm a product of that era where we're supposed to be tough and not talk about these things. Maybe it is inherited characteristics or model behavior that I grew up watching my mother go through periods of depression and whatnot here. So, and I love my mother, so I'm going to try and be like my mother.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. But we reach these crises, and the holidays seem to cause more of those holidays. Why is the holiday such a hard thing for people to go through if you have any sorts of pressure, anxiety, stress, whatever, you know, we just bury it during this period because we're supposed to be happy. Why does the happiest time of the year turn out for some people to be the unhappiest time of the year?
There's so much pressure around it.
Yeah.
You know, whether you had an idyllic childhood, which, you know, it's rare, that's a rare find. But still, if the holidays were magical, then you have this impetus to recreate it.
Right.
If they've always been a disaster, then you want to make it better. There's all this, everybody's looking at you like, you know, what are you doing? How are you celebrating? There's media, there's lots of signs we get around.
And
you know,
it starts so early. It's not just a day or two or even a week. It's months.
Mm-hmm.
You're preparing, you're buying gifts. There's a pressure to cook and to do things and to buy things and to do things and to race around. And everybody's always telling you, you know, you're having a good time. And the music's playing and everything. And I don't feel good. I'm playing out my life here. I always get overwhelmed at the holidays.
You are more of a an introvert too, it can be really challenging, right? Because again, the expectation is you're supposed to be having fun and be happy,
right?
And sometimes we're feeling scared about financial pressure. We're feeling nervous about what's Uncle John going to do when he shows up at the dinner table.
Yeah, is he going to be crazy again? Like is he every year? This year?
Are we going to fight about a certain topic that can go sideways? So there's all that in the back of our minds while we're still trying to create this amazing memory. People get really strapped in terms of trying to find the perfect gift. And so we get wrapped up in all that. I encourage clients, in particular, I had one gentleman that I was working with who just decided, like, his wife is very, very social. And he said, I cannot do that this year. I was like, well, why don't you go to her, say, hey, in order for me to show up in the way you want me to show up, can I withdraw and not show up at some of these events so I can show up the way you want me to?
So when I'm there, I'm there, but I can't, let's not stretch it out too thin here.
Right? So that I'm not worried about what's going on at the office this time of year, whatever it might be. And he was a little nervous about it, but it actually landed. She's like, I don't care if you're there. So he really thought, he was like, she's going to be so upset. And she was like, okay, cool. I'll go with my friends.
Again, we can't talk about these things. Why can't we talk? That was the gist of what I was trying to get at the beginning here. Mental health is there. It's a real problem. It's still a kind of a taboo. Guys in particular, this time especially, we can't say, I don't want to do this.
Fear of being weak. Fear, the stigma that's attached to it. There's also oftentimes a cultural element to it. Mm-hmm. How was it addressed growing up, right? Did people talk about it? It's getting better, but there's a lot of stigma around what could go wrong. And think about every time we talk about a shooter or somebody kind of being explosive or reactionary or a Santa in a mall that takes off.
Oh, geez, yeah.
It's usually because of a mental health issue, and so it gets really stigmatized, and that's part of it.
So I don't know if anybody else listening to this has the same thing I do, but I almost become like Scrooge the last few years, bah humbug. I want to just shut it down. I'm so overwhelmed by the task that I want to just sort of withdraw from it. And that's horrible because I know I got grandkids, I got a daughter, you know, family, and everybody else wants to celebrate and have a good time. And I just sort of want to withdraw during this. I enjoy the moments that we're together, the dinner, the opening the gifts or something. But all the rest of this, I just can't wait for it all to be over here.
Well, the first thing we would address if we were meeting,
I need help, Doc. That's what you
would be what is the feeling that's coming up for you, and where does it show up more predominantly, and what would it take for you to enjoy the holidays? How do you want to experience them?
I'd like it to scale back, and the expectations and everything. As I've gotten older, I don't know how to put up the tree. I don't know how to put the decorations. I want to buy the gifts.
Right.
Yes, I want to do some of those things, but I'm getting tired. I'd like to come up with a new tradition. I'd like to come up with something. I'd like to simplify the whole thing. I'd like to just pare it back a little bit and maybe like make it a little less. I can breathe once in a while throughout the whole thing.
So what would make it fun for you? You know, and what has been, maybe you start with what has been your best holiday season? Mm. When did it go right?
So think back to when and what was good about that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one I'll go down. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older here, but traditions. You know, when I was a kid, it was a big deal. We had traditions, and we'd go places, and somebody would bring the cookies, and somebody bring this dish, and we'd do certain things. We're all in such a rush today. I feel frustrated. I feel like an old grandpa that I think traditions have gone away, and we've lost some of that. So we're just here, open this up, good this, I got to get over here, I got to do this. And it's all just rush, rush, rush.
So maybe next year, pick one you want to reinstate.
Mm.
Like for my family, my children bitch about it, excuse me, every year. But
we're going to get real in this show here, right?
We go to see usually the Nutcracker on Christmas Eve, right? And I did it when I was a kiddo, and they started doing it when they were like maybe two.
And they're dragging their
feet. But now it's almost a joke, right? They expect it and they enjoy it, and we all know that they're going to give me some grief about it, and we're not going to get to lunch in the time they want to get to lunch, right. And it's going to go sideways at some point. This year they got kicked out of their seats because somebody sat in them,
I'm trying to tell you, the holidays are awful.
Yeah, it was not great. But you know that's kind of what makes the memory. But the tradition is that's one of the ones that we always stick to. We do that. So pick one and reinstate it if it's important to you, and let everybody know.
Of course,
you
got to get everybody to get along with it, because everybody else rolls their eyes and says, "Oh, I don't want to do that."
You have to be willing to let them be irritated for a while.
Okay, good.
Right.
I'm going to tell my daughter you said that, and my grandchildren.
Like, just go with me on this. It's really important. It may not be your favorite thing, but I would really like to see us try this next year.
All right. Another, that's the regular population. Just feeling a little stressed, a little frustrated. It's too fast. It's too much. I'm getting overwhelmed. We're losing traditions. Whatever it is that's irritating you about this time of year. Mm-hmm. There are others. We do a show here, a very serious show, a woman who's a 20-year survivor of pancreatic cancer, a cancer that most people
don't make it for
more than a couple of years. So she's not sure why, but she's become a very big advocate in the community and always talking about hope and help and what do you do. And she just did a show at the end of the year, and she said, boy, it's hard if you've got a diagnosis. You want to hang on for the holidays, and everybody else is trying to be happy, and they're feeling sad because you're dying, or you're really sick, or whatever here, and you don't want to do it. That's another whole world of holidays here. What do you do if you feel sick? What if you do if you got a serious illness here, or people you know? Do we just push on and put on a happy face? That was the world I was brought up in, or do we acknowledge some of this and somehow recognize what it is? It may be our last Christmas together. It
might be, right? And how do you...
Or holiday, or whatever holiday.
And how do you honor that?
Right.
I actually have a person that I work with who's one of their really good friends was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Mm. This might raise some red flags. I don't have any skin in this game, but this person scheduled their end of life because they knew that they had Alzheimer's. So they'll be going to Switzerland in a few months.
Wow. So they really made a decision. This is, I'm going to choose when to end my life. That's a real hot topic.
It's a real hot topic. And they were, interestingly enough, going to Michigan to a football game.
Because we've been waiting 50 years, 100 years for this to happen.
You had to go. Right. but my client was like, how do I... he was reaching out to all his friends' friends to see what they knew and how they should manage it. Yeah. And I said, why not just ask your friend? What do you need? Do you want this to be a topic? Do you want to have one moment where we all address it and
we
tell you how we feel?
And we love you.
Yeah.
And
or do you want to just push through and drink some beer and go rah, rah, Michigan? What is it that you need? And that's the end of the day. As much as people get uncomfortable around that and they dance around it, the person that's suffering probably will appreciate it. Like, how do you want to get through this?
Get it out in the open. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in talking through everything. That's why I do believe in the work that you do. Because a lot of it, maybe I'm oversimplifying. I know this is very complex and trying to, it's a riddle. It's a knot that you're trying to undo here within their head. And you're trying to understand the past, and you're trying to understand their lifestyle and the forces and all things coming together. The past, present, future that's caused this problem here. But at the same time, I think so much of it is just unwinding it, opening up and talking about it. That's what it did for me. Mm-hmm. I found that just talking about it, wasn't that the therapist necessarily, the light bulbs went on, but some of the questions she asked, some of the thoughts that we, things we talked about, did open it up. And I think talking about it has got to be the start.
There's a couple things, but it is huge. And one of the ways in which therapy works is I always admire colleagues that really know how to craft a question.
Yeah,
right. Because
that one you go, ooh, I never thought of it
like,
that
ooh,
way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a professor once use the analogy, well, if men are really just wolves in sheep's clothing. And I was like, I don't know that I'll ever think of that, but it's a good one.
Yeah, right.
But also kind of mining clients through identifying what they're feeling. Because your feeling is where you're going to get it first. If you can stay a little attuned to your body or start to tune into it, you'll feel a feeling before you'll think the thought. And what'll happen is you'll start to try and manage the thought or the feeling with another thought, rather than just going, I'm feeling sad right now. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't want to go to another holiday party. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, right. And again, it's my cultural background. I grew up in that Midwestern, Catholic kind of upbringing. You don't talk about these things. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about your feelings. Particularly men didn't talk about their feelings. I think that's changed dramatically through life. But still, we were supposed to, that wasn't supposed to be, you're John Wayne. You're supposed to be a big, tough guy here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I really, when I went to therapy, that was one of the things that she said, I don't think you're really in touch with your feelings. I don't think you really felt any. You somehow block all these feelings, like, oh, this is uncomfortable. And when we sort of got them out, I think that's when I started to feel really anxious, like, oh, I don't know what this is. This is weird, I'm not used to talking through these things. So that's why I'm so happy to talk about these things, because I feel like a recovering alcoholic or something. I'm just going to talk about these things all the time.
It's interesting. What people get really afraid of in feelings is that they'll get stuck. That once they have a feeling, that whether it's sad, like whether they want to acknowledge a sadness, or that they're felt left out or lonely, that they'll never get out of it. But quite frankly,
I got to stop you on that one, because we just did a show on that again, on this pancreatic cancer thing. I said, why is it that we can't accept somebody's going to tell you something very upsetting, very sad, and everybody has to pretend like we can't talk. We can't be sad for a second in today's society. Everything's got to be upbeat, positive, happy. We can't even say the word death. We just lost Uncle Joe. He passed away. We're so sensitive about anything negative sounding. Don't be negative. Be positive. As if somehow, if we're even for a moment, we acknowledge and say, I'm sad. I'm going to cry. I'm upset. I'm worried. That, oh my God, then you're stuck in that. I think that's exactly the problem. We think we can't experience that emotion without it overwhelming
us, and it will never end.
Yeah.
And I promise you, I'm not supposed to promise you're not going to feel that feeling forever. I behoove of you to introduce me one person who's had the same feeling their entire life. It's not possible, right? And then the other thing I'm going to do is quote a little Brene Brown and say, it's also not possible to fully feel the positive feelings, if that's how we're going to label them, without acknowledging the negative ones. If you're numbing the negative ones with alcohol or whatever,
right, gambling,
running
or
gambling or whatever it might be, people will say, they'll get stuck even in healthy habits as a way to monitor feelings and to feel positively. But honestly, you're not going to then really experience joy and love and connection in the same way. You miss that because you're a little bit running on being numb.
It can't just be all happy talk. It can't. We live in a world where we're constantly, if we don't feel happy, then we go take a pill.
Exactly.
Or we take something. Mm-hmm. Everything's got to be positive, upbeat, and everything like that. I had a friend's mother who was always like, everything's wonderful. No, it's not wonderful. I just broke my arm here. Oh, it'll be good.
It'll be good. We'll get a bandage on it. You'll be great.
Yeah.
But what happens in particular, because, we work with, the name of my practice is Newport Beach Trauma Therapy. So people have a lot of questions around trauma, but trauma is kind of speculative, right? So if you've lived a life of never breaking your arm or never having a bad thing happen to you, and you break your arm and suddenly you can't play in the game or do the things you need to excel, that can be really almost traumatizing, in the same way somebody who's maybe had some bigger struggles, maybe lived in foster care, has similar traumas, but they may be actually, depending upon their coping mechanisms and the strategies and what they've been offered in terms of resources, they may be better able to withstand it.
I completely agree. And since this is my therapy, my hour here or something here, I only have one daughter. Mm-hmm. My wife and I adopted a girl from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
She was brought to this country when she was 8 or 9 illegally. People always say, oh, you're so liberal and, not worried about immigrants. Why don't you do something? I did. I adopted one of them here. And she was in foster care, and we're good Irish Catholics. We went to Mass once, and we heard all these kids are lost in foster care, and we didn't have any kids. So I said, let's look into this.
Right.
And all of a sudden, here we are doing this. And her story is amazing. She was just abandoned by her mother. Her grandmother dies. She was basically almost sold to somebody here in the States. She was kind of treated like a slave by this whoever took her in down East L.A., beaten up, bruised, and they made the mistake of sending her to school, and she had broken ribs and all this other stuff because they were beating her. She didn't do certain things. And suddenly she can't speak English, and she's in a foreign country, and she's in foster care. Mm-hmm. And so we find her. She's a couple of years in foster care. She's like 10 or 11. You know, this is not when you're supposed to adopt kids because there's, oh, my God, they're really damaged by this point. And mm-hmm. and she has a lot of stuff that's not, some of it may never go away to the trauma. But she's learned to cope. She's a happy person. She's a positive person in the Hope Mart. Maybe some of it's blocking. Maybe some of it's just gutting it out. Maybe some of it's, you know, learning how to move forward. And I told her, she was so embarrassed. This is the point when mm-hmm. she came to live with us in South Orange County. Nice, affluent community.
Right.
Didn't want to tell anybody. I said, well, they can figure it out. You barely speak English and other things. They know something's going on here. I said, you're tougher than they are. Mm-hmm. As horrible as what you went through, mm-hmm. the plus side is, sound like my friend's mother, there's always a happy side to something here. But the plus side is you have learned to survive. And you have learned to endure and to go through trauma. Most of these kids have never experienced any kind of trauma. And God forbid they do. I'm not sure they're equipped to handle. I mean, trauma, you know,
right.
death, loss, disaster, you know, bad things happening. Mm-hmm. She went through that. And I think in many ways, it's helped her.
So I would say,
not that you want to go through that to not get that you there.
But what you did there was resource building, right? And I do. Yeah. I work with clients. I just did that today that think they're powerless, right? And we
yes.
look at and we go, okay, let's review all the things that you've come through and kind of what is fear telling you and how true is it, you know, approach. Because if you look at some of their stories, they've really managed to make it through and survive a multitude of things that would take some other people down. But they yeah. see it as a deficit. And so you got to kind of reframe that.
Mm-hmm. Right. The immigrant story, we have a lot of, we do a show with the Hispanic Chamber. They bring in people who are very successful. Most of them came in broke, poor, mm-hmm. just these horrible stories of how they got here and why they came here and overcame all this stuff and death and disease and gunfire and everything. You know, oh, my God. That's what makes them resilient. That's what gives them the strength to go on. Now, I'm not saying, I live in the helicopter generation, the baby boomers.
Right.
We hover over our kids. Nothing should go wrong. Everybody gets a trophy. Nobody's a loser. Everybody's mm-hmm. a winner. Everything's happy all the time here. I don't know that that's really going to pay off in the long run here. We're trying to protect everybody from these things, and you got to get some bruises along the way here.
I think, or at least my experience with working with parents, is that oftentimes that comes from their own feelings, and they're trying to heal. And it can be really therapeutic if you're mindful of how you're purposing it. But when we nurture our kids in that way, or when we give them things that we think that we were a deficit for us,
right?
Then it
can, I didn't have this, so I'm going to give everything to you now.
But it can help you heal, right? Because
right.
you get to kind of witness it through your child. But again, you have to be mindful of where the benefit is in titrating that line
right.
a little
is it
bit.
For them or for you here?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be the big football star because I couldn't be. Yeah. Right.
Or I'm going to show up at every game because nobody ever came to my
yeah.
game. And I'm going to be the parents that, you know, bring the water bottles and do all these things.
You're talking my life here. All right. Well, I'm the poster child for all these things that are going wrong. Let's give them some hope as we end today here. We've talked
sure.
about all the reasons. The pressures of the holidays and the year end, the anxiety, the pace and everything else, maybe illness, maybe other sort of thing, maybe past, maybe finances, all these things that put pressure on us this time of year. Give us some hope. Walk us through some steps. I think the key one is to start with what you say. We're not powerless.
We're not powerless. And starting to identify the hope is, I mean, some people go straight to resolutions, which I want to touch on quickly and
right.
say that I'm you're going to hate me. I'm not the biggest fan of resolutions.
Oh, thank you.
I think it really can set
Please
you.
Please come back every year because we're always trying to force ourselves to do it. And I don't know that this is the time of year. Yes, it's an artificial marker. New year, new day, new plan. Corporations do it. I should do
right.
it. There's some logic to that, but the pressure, I'm going to do it right after I've gone through all the rest of this worry pace. I just want to hole up, as you say, hole up and watch Hallmark shows or something.
Well, right, exactly. Well, you're on an adrenaline come down for starters, right?
Yeah,
so your
right.
energy isn't there. I kind of sometimes suggest that New Year's should be a marker to come up with another start date.
And, ah, there you go.
But also, if you're determined to have some goals or resolutions, it should be around, they should be more short term, right? So what am I going to do this month? You know, or do I want to make sure I get to 4 Pilates classes this month?
Not how am I going to fix my life finally? This
mm-mm,
is the year.
It starts small because if that's just you're actually asking yourself to be an incredibly different person. The other thing that's important is...
And you set yourself up to fail. That's what I've felt. That's why I gave up doing resolutions, because then I just felt even worse. Oh, I didn't lose the 10 pounds. I didn't do this, you know.
They should be tied to your values. Like, oh, do you really value that? And they should be specific, right, if you're really going to lean into them. I think I told you this before we started. I had one couple that I work with that they were both finance people, and every year they would sit down and they'd have a date, and they would kind of map out what they wanted for their family and their life over the next year or 5 years. But there would be short markers, like we want to, you know, make sure that we go on this vacation this year, and this is how we're going to save for it. So it was also, there were steps involved in getting to where they wanted to go.
God love them, but I hate those people, because I'm always trying to, you know, I want to do all these things. So, oh, my God, I just got to breathe. I got to relax. I've gone through all this here.
That's the first thing, is just give yourself permission to rest after all of that, right? And not feel the added burden
the
of
next
trying
pressure
to be,
of doing the next thing here.
Mm-hmm, until we lean into Valentine's
what
Day.
What was the movie or the book when I was a kid? How fast does See Sammy Run or something like that? It was something all about, you know, how fast can you keep going until you finally explode? Mm. I would be the perfect parent. I would be the perfect worker. I would be perfect. And someday you stumble and then, you know.
And then, wow.
Yeah, right. Well, all right. Last couple thoughts here. We'll wrap it up. It is a new year.
Mm-hmm.
If people need help, I discovered this myself. And I'll just give my last endorsement. Sure. I don't know you and your practice, but I know you're well thought of and well reviewed and all these things. Newport Beach Trauma Therapy. I know you deal with very serious issues, not just, oh, I'm feeling depressed and unhappy right now. There's maybe even deeper traumas that you're helping people go through. But you need help. You need a coach. Mm-hmm. You can't do these things alone. And the reason I always say that is because your brain, if I burn my hand, my body says, don't do that again. But if I feel depressed, my body says, oh, withdraw, stay alone. And like, that doesn't help.
It doesn't help. It's self-perpetuating, right?
My body isn't sending me the right signals. I need somebody outside of me to say, get up and exercise. Look at what you have accomplished. You know, somebody, I need a coach at that point in time. I don't know what you call yourself, but I need a coach. You know, even the great football player, the great Michael Jordan, the basketball player, said, I wouldn't have been what I would without a coach. Somebody, I can't see it all myself.
I'm not directive, but I think we kind of look at what you want for your life. Mm-hmm. What is holding you back from that, right? And what's actually
help me
what's
find it? Yeah.
Yeah, and what's the value of the way you're doing it right now? Because you're operating a certain way because it's working for you.
Right.
So if it's if it's wanting to hunker down and stay in,
or drink too much, or whatever else, you know, there's we all have these coping mechanisms how we get through the days.
Yeah. So it's all of those things, but really it starts with kind of exploring how you feel and what you want for yourself and your values. Yeah, and so that's kind of what we do.
And all of those are, I say it helps to have to talk to somebody about, you think you know what your values are. You think you know what you're feeling. I know what I'm feeling. I know what my values are. Ah, do you really? You know? Or have you been kidding yourself? You're covering this stuff up here. You're not
last kind of trick, because I hate journaling. Let me be clear. I do it. I hate it. It's a wormhole.
I do think it works, but I haven't been very disciplined about doing that in my life.
I suggest people spend time it and give themselves 10 minutes, because otherwise you could spend... it becomes overwhelming. But the value of it is, if you're just trying to figure out what's important to yourself or what you're feeling about something, is it accesses a different part of your brain. And everybody thinks that they can just kind of use their brain to work through it.
Right.
But when you write it down, you'll find some interesting things. Mm-hmm.
I have career coaches. I have business coaches. I have consultants that come in and help me deal with things. Because there are things I just don't know how to do, or I can't see through my own problem. I can't get out of myself and see what I'm doing. Oh, that's what I'm doing wrong. It's so obvious to everybody else, but not to me. That's the value of going to a therapist, a psychotherapist, somebody here. I'll call you a coach to help guide, because I'm a guy. I have to think in coaching terms.
I do have a certification in coaching, but mostly I'm a psychotherapist.
There you go.
But what I don't want to scare people away with this idea. People tend to try to minimize their feelings. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear that trauma, almost everybody has some experience with trauma or some relationship to it. And if it's getting in the way, or it's a lasting emotion that keeps you from where you want to go. Because what will happen is we'll get caught in these these loops of fear and trying to stay safe.
Right.
If it's that, then that's where we can start. And it can be, we work with people from all parts of life.
We've all heard terrible stories in our families or friends or whatever. Or maybe we've gone through it ourselves where it's just debilitating. I mean, it's hard to ever get loss of a child or something else. And it's just people can never... they say, I can never recover. I can't imagine. I haven't had that kind of devastating trauma, but I know people that have had.
No, you just have to figure out how you want to be in that and how you kind of want to honor that. It's hard. That's a hard one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not hard to get help. It all starts with a phone call. How do they reach you and if they want to reach out to you? Is it scary? Is it judgmental? Is it expensive? Is it what keeps us from reaching out and doing these things?
Some people are a little scared. Some people have this idea that we can magically read their minds and we know what all their weaknesses and expose them and we don't, right? It's
why'd you ask that? What do you wonder about that for?
Or they'll be like
defensive, right?
Maybe the other part is you have to be ready, right?
Yes. Because
some people are I'm here, fix me, and that's not. It's a journey. It's a partnership, and I kind of, the way I work is you get to identify what's not working and what the problem is, and we get to map out how we want to address that, because quite frankly, you know you way better than I do.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the first step. But it's not, people just get nervous that it's scary or it's expensive or they don't have time.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, we live in Orange County. People have the, dollars usually. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on and letting me, if nothing else, vent all my feelings and frustrations about this time of year. It seems to bring out all this negativity, and it's supposed to be so positive and wonderful and happy. It's a burden. I just want to get it over with. And here we are. And for some, it's even more traumatic, traumas or past or finances or whatever else they're dealing with. There's hope. There is hope. That's the first thing I always found. And two, it does help to talk about it. And three, if there's a third one, it's that you're not helpless.
Not alone. People, my experience is most people want the same thing, which is love, connection, and to be heard.
Amen. That's all I want for this year. All right, good. That's where we leave it on that note. Love, connection, and what was it? Love, happiness, and to be heard?
Love, connection, and to be heard.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Well, those are our mantra. That's the thing we're going to leave us on the up note here for this year.
Perfect.
Love, connection, and being heard. Well, today we heard you loud and clear. Everybody heard me. It's supposed to be a show about you, and I'm using it as a free therapy session for me here.
I think actually next year I should come back before the holidays.
I think you should. So stop this before I get all wound up again here. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. How do they reach you? How do they get in touch with you?
Newport Beach Trauma Therapy. I'm not sure. They can.
Is there a website?
A website. It's NewportBeachTraumaTherapy.com. It's right in Fashion Island. So right locally in Newport Beach. Easy to get to.
Everybody can find it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No reason. Uh-huh. Reach out to get some help. Find out that what we're saying, love, connection, and
love to be love, connection, and to
heard.
Be heard.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Okay. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there you have it. If you're feeling any of those feelings, why not check out Newport Beach Trauma Therapy? Or somebody. Find somebody to talk to. Find somebody who can help you. Because you're not alone. This is a new year. Let's make it a good one. Thanks for all of us right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.